Yo, so listen, Rambo Mania World, I got gripe with this man, right? Even though I need him to kick Hazel's ass on Sunday, like, we need to really tell him about himself. Because he had my hopes up that I was finally going to smoke a blunt with him for my fucking birthday.
And then it's, I acknowledge you, okay? I owe you for this. Like I said.
I am the tribe of chief, apparently.
You are the tribe of chief, and I acknowledge you, and I owe you. I know this. It's the American dream's fault, not Dusty Rhodes, but just trying to survive in these United States, because work.
Fuck the man.
Fuck the man, indeed. That's how we rocking.
And apparently, you know, we're tribe of chiefs now.
Yes. We are in the tribe of chiefs. There are multiple here. There's a whole tribe of chiefs.
Better than the island of relevancy?
Yeah, yeah. It's even beyond the island of relevancy. It's an entire continent of relevancy. That's what's going on in the tribe of chiefs.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is I, Kevin Reed, what it says, what my name says.
It's your girlfriend's favorite kaboom.
A three-time Ramble Mania World Heavyweight Champion. Bang. And with me, I have the man, the myth. He is the number one contender against the MJF energy wheeling, sucking soul of Ramble Mania. Hazel the Eye Zombie. He is the one, the only, TJ the Great.
TJ the Great. You damn right. Former 11-time Ramble Mania champion. Soon to be 12. Come Forbidden Door because I'm capturing that shit. That's how I rock. It's AEW. It's New Japan. This is my match in the main event if we're honest. Bryan Danielson and Kazuchika Okada. That's the type of shit a nigga like me been dreaming of. So, there's no way I lose here. It just cannot happen.
So, if you were to analyze your opponent's weakness, right? What would Hazel's weakness be in this match, in this card lineup?
Like I said, Hazel has often made decisions concerning New Japan based off emotion, which makes sense. I mean, you know, we love New Japan. We love many of the guys that are there, and we have our opinions about what we think should happen. So he's going to make one of those emotional choices, and I'm going to see through it, and I'm going to be like, no, this is the logical choice. This is what Gato and Tony will do because it makes sense in regards to X, Y, and Z, and that's going to be the difference between us, and that's where I'm going to win the championship.
So do you feel like it's going to be with the main event he's going to mess it up?
Maybe. And I mean, it's honestly interesting because – with the two main matches on Forbidden Door, I have a solid idea of Omega and Ospreay, but Danielson Okada is a admittedly very tough call because you could put either guy over and it makes sense. Like, these are two of the best wrestlers of a generation, and you know.
I personally think, because didn't they actually have fights in New Japan too?
Danielson and Okada?
Yeah.
They have never wrestled before.
So it's a dream match.
This is the definition of a dream match. They have never wrestled before.
This is the first time we're going to see in American TV Ospreay versus Omega. That's always a good thing. Finally, America caught up.
Yes, Ospreay's second Forbidden Door. Of course, he wrestled last year, Orange Cassidy, and what I thought was the best match on the show. His match with Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom this year is my personal match of the year so far. And they got an opportunity to top that being in Kenny Omega's home country of Canada. So there's a lot going on in the top two matches alone. And we filled out the rest of the card this week, and it's going to be a special, special time. But I mean, let me not get too excited because we're not here to talk.
Wait, I got one more question about AEWs.
Okay.
So I don't remember where I heard this conversation and this comparison. I don't know if it was the Mofongo chat or we said this the last one.
Okay.
But Orange Cassidy is the AEW version of Dolph Ziggler.
Wait, what? Have we ever... who said that in the Mofongo chat? I wonder... I'm just saying,
I swear to God, I'm trying to say... But did you ever hear that comparison before?
I've never heard that comparison. And in what way? They don't even wrestle alike.
In the way of like how they only have them like mid card and pushing people type thing.
No, Dolph Ziggler wishes he could get the type of push Orange Cassidy's gotten. I mean, like, well, Dolph Ziggler has won the world championship before, but I mean, like, Orange is pushing AEW. I feel like is perfect for what he is. He's one of the top draws in the company, and he's treated like that. Like, and he's become a major workhorse in the company. I guess that's how they can be similar. Ziggler had his era where he was a major workhorse, and Orange now has his era where he's doing a workhorse with the international title. But
do you feel like he's gonna get though? Like, because you know, down the line, especially we don't know what AEW is gonna be like in the next couple of years,
yeah.
You know, so eventually people that are on their high ground, you know, they reach their pinnacle and then.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you never know what could happen in time, and maybe they do stop-start type of – but that's the thing. That's what I think the difference is. They don't do stop-start with Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy's level has been pretty consistent alongside these first few years of AEW. Like, he's always been an upper-mid-card, fringe main event type of guy, which I guess Dolph Ziggler has been in the past in WWE, but I think the difference is Dolph Ziggler – has hit these points of stop-start where you felt like they were going to push him and go through with him and give him a big win over whoever or give him that big title, but it never panned out. Yeah, like he got the title like twice, but it never really panned out beyond that. Like the last real big thing Dolph Ziggler did where you kind of believed, okay, they're finally really going with him.
Oh, when he did it with Bobby Roode?
Shout out to the Dirty Dogs, but I mean, like, I'm talking back in like 2016 where it was him and Miz for the Intercontinental title, and like they really made that feud work. But I think with Orange, I think Orange has had, you know, he's feuded with Pac, he's feuded with Jericho, he did have matches with Omega, like, you know, for the title and everything like that, but I don't think they've ever really. Like, their pushes aren't similar in that sense. I don't think they've ever really set up Orange Cassidy to be a world title contender. And when they have, you know, they've only done it once or twice. Like, Orange Cassidy's spot is secure. There's no one that can do what Orange Cassidy does. That's what I think the main difference is between, like, guys like Orange Cassidy in AEW and the WWE system in general. Dolph Ziggler is a guy that they will stop and start because generally most guys under the main event level are interchangeable.
Yeah.
Whereas there are guys that can put in the level of work that Orange Cassidy does, but for his specific position on the card as that sort of fringe main event level babyface that you can throw out in an opener. Like last year, like I said, he wrestled Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door in what was an underrated sort of dream match, and it blew the doors off everybody's expectations. I think only Orange Cassidy can be that type of character in AEW. Matt Hardy compared him to The Undertaker in that he's this reliable, unique sort of character that you can always fall back on whenever you need something interesting or fun for someone to do. So, yeah, I don't think Orange and Dolph are really similar in that sense. Yeah, I like both guys, though. I like Dolph. Just, you know.
Yeah, like I think of them both as workhorses, but I wanted to get your opinion on it because it was eating at me all day because I was trying to remember where the fuck did I hear this. I promised you guys I would start watching, so I started watching, so now I have nothing but questions, so that's your fault on top of the fact that you didn't come for my birthday.
That's true. I do owe you for that.
So now I'm going down an AEW rabbit hole.
It's fun on this side. Come down the rabbit hole.
Listen,
they got a bunny over here too. She out right now, but we even got a bunny.
I remember when Orange Cassidy did the orange juice on Jericho. And then he came up with a towel of Orange Cassidy. I was dying.
Jericho's coming out for weeks with that damn jacket. You ruined my $14,000, whatever the hell it cost, jacket. Whatever the hell he said it cost.
No, he still, like, I'm sorry. Jericho still looks like a bloated corpse, though. Like, he looks bigger than he should be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's in his 50s at this point, so.
Yeah, but we've seen people in their 50s. Like, Shino Mac is, like, in his 50s, bro, and still doesn't look like that.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess, you know, with Jericho, it's like I've said before, he has his little bits of vices here and there. So, I mean, as long as he can go in the ring, and he generally still can. Like, a Jericho match generally is usually going to be pretty good. So, as long as he can still go, it don't make no never mind of me, really.
I got to bring you to Raw and just talk wrestling with us, because we need to do more of that. Because I got all these questions, but we have to talk about SmackDown and WWE.
Yeah, let's get the world.
It kind of feels depressing all over again. Damn it, Kevin, I hate you right now.
Me? I'm the one who has to come in and watch this show.
We have bunnies and orange juice everywhere.
We do. We got the bunny down there and then the orange juice, and there's a whole lot of crazy AEW stuff going on. But yeah, let's get to this double E. Yeah, Juice Robinson. He going crazy. He always going crazy. Juice is my boy. I can't wait to talk about it. But yeah, let's talk about this WWE.
So, I mean, if it helps us to talk about AEW a little while. So we have, according to our friend that at PW Mania, Xavier Woods wants to see the New Day versus the Elite Dream match. Xavier Woods is all in on a potential trio showdown between the New Day and Elite. The best Rumble player in WWE recently appeared as a guest on My Love Letter to Wrestling podcast with Mark Andrews for an in-depth interview covering all things wrestling. During the discussion, the veteran spoke about a potential dream match involving himself, Kofi Kingston, and Big E against the Elite trio of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. And it was the 10-year anniversary of the New Day, where he quotes and says, "I feel like the 10-year anniversary for New Day, my magic wand wish would be to go to Tokyo for a week, spend time in Tokyo arcades and hanging out." There are so many names on the list to have a potential dream match in Tokyo, but it feels weird to start anywhere because I want to start everywhere. It would be a legit branch to wrestle other teams. Obviously, the Young Bucks and the Elite. We'd love a 6-man tag team with them. So many people.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the New Day. 10 years as a group. That's impressive. And they've been over for pretty much all of it. So, like, the New Day is always over. But yeah, 10 years, they've been around. The 5-year anniversary recently just passed of the first time they sort of met, when they did the, I think it was C2E2 or whatever event that was.
Yeah.
That they did the Elite, versus the New Day, and they played each other in Street Fighter and they ate the peppers and everything like that. And that I always thought was a super fun time. Like, before AEW even existed, before all this Forbidden Door talk, that was sort of a Forbidden Door kind of thing with these guys appearing together on stage, and they cut promos on each other. And like, it was very fun. Like, I'll always have a fond memory of watching that stream that day. Just like, man, this is really cool. Like, these, and obviously I think a wrestling match would be great. They're all great wrestlers. They're some of the best, and all the work they've, both trios have put in, I think they'd make for a great match. But you know, it's up to the powers that be to make that happen, if they're ever interested in making it happen. Like,
and also to listen to Tev for Sunday's picks.
Yeah. You know, you already know where it's at. Keep your eye on the prize, and I will lead you to the promised land. But
come on, Thomas Khan.
I would love to see the match. But I would, if we're not gonna get the match, I would also love to see them play each other in Street Fighter 6. Because they play each other in Street Fighter 5. We got a way better Street Fighter game out now. So yeah, get to work on making that happen. Let's see Kenny versus Woods in Street Fighter 6. Let's run it back.
Says, if you and Six at the Banter Club were told to go play video games on Up, Up, Down, Down, what game would y'all be playing and who's really going to take it?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I feel like me and Six could give everybody there to work in Halo. We could probably give them the work in Halo.
And then Six, if you when you watch this, I need you to comment if you agree on this. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we could – I mean, the easy answer is WWE 2K or a wrestling game. But for a non-wrestling game, yeah, let's go Halo. I like Halo. I like our chances in Halo.
Could you imagine what they would choose if they did 2K23?
Man, listen. They probably pick some – I mean, I'm with it, but they probably – some crazy characters to go with in there.
But, you know, to hear all of this, go subscribe to Rambo Mania. Click that bell. You know, support us. We support you.
Exactly. You know the vibes.
But, oh, my God. So I choked when I read this. So in the spirit of comparing people because we're petty, I guess, Ric Flair compares Logan Paul to Shane McMahon.
In what way?
Shane O'Mac is a new superstar to pass his daredevil torch to. The Nature Boy thinks so. Ric Flair spoke on a recent episode of It Could Be a Man podcast about how Logan Paul reminds him of Shane McMahon. I expect that he'll, in quotes, Paul, try. He reminds me of Shane McMahon, not afraid of doing anything. Flair continued, so I think it'll be a great contribution. I mean, those ladder matches are tough, you know. It took a lot of bumps in those. And I've only been in a couple of them, but I don't give them.
You know what? I'll give him that because I kind of also compared him to Shane McMahon when I was talking to Hazel on Raw this past week. In the sense that Shane McMahon, I've always said this about Shane. Shane McMahon is not a worker. He's not a wrestler. He's a guy that is fearless and will do anything. Like
Logan Paul is the same idiot.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Paul is a worker, though. Like, he has obviously learned how to wrestle and has done it very well. But he is the same in the sense that he seems like he's not really afraid to do anything. And he just does a bunch of shit. Like I said this, Logan Paul is a spot monkey, low-key. He just does moves. He does the go to sleep. He does the buckshot lariat. He just does shit. He just does shit that he saw whatever wrestler do on TV. And I'm not saying that's not a bad thing at all. In fact, I think it's a good thing because his matches are entertaining. Like, we need to get rid of the negative connotation toward spot monkeys, at least in the case of guys like Logan Paul, who are good at it. Like, guys who are good at just going in there and doing a bunch of spots and making it entertaining for the fans. As long as the fans are entertained, that should be what counts. And I think Logan Paul is good in that regard. So, yeah, I guess he is sort of like Shane McMahon in that. He'll just go out. He'll do whatever. He'll take whatever kind of bump. And the people will like it.
I feel like it's just both show-offs.
Yeah, I mean, in for sure, that in that sense.
This type of, like, ice my way, you know, boisterous. Like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, you big shit talker. Yeah.
But it's like good straight talking. Like, it's not like some of the talkers we've had nowadays.
Yeah, like, from what I've seen of Logan Paul in the wrestling world, he has been good. Like, even, I think it was one of the press conferences for a Saudi show where he basically just literally did a botchamania unintentionally and was just like, I am the table. Yeah, he was facing Roman. He was like, you're the head of the table. I am the table. And it was like, yeah, it's a botchamania. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, this guy belongs here. He quoting botchamania and shit. He knows what he's doing. And apparently he didn't know that that was a botchamania line, but he just did it off rip. And, you know, that's even better. He belongs in this world. He's proven it.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's whatever about the stuff he's done. Money in the bank? Am I gonna watch it?
Is he gonna get it?
Oh, yeah, sure, give it to him. I don't care. Let him wrestle Seth for the secondary title. Why not?
I really feel like he would be dumb enough to go for a rematch with Roman.
But that's kind of why I feel like nobody's gonna go after Roman, because it would, you know, they're not gonna win. Like, or rather, the fans should know that whoever gets it should probably just go after Seth, because you can create more of a believable opportunity that they'll take it off Seth, because you know nobody's taking this shit off Roman. You know, like, you, we have to know that, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, though, I did remember reading an article, right, that said that if Roman loses the belt, they're going to make it go away type deal.
And it should go away, because there should only be one world title. Or, yeah, at the very least, if a motherfucker was going to have another world title, they should beat the world champion for it. You can't introduce a world title and have without having someone beat the old world champion. Like, that don't make no sense. It's like I've been saying. They don't have two world titles. They have one world title, and they have a here, nigga, damn. They have a consolation prize. It's like, I like Seth, and I like what they're trying to have him do with the title, but he didn't beat Roman, so I don't acknowledge him. I'm sorry.
You know who we do acknowledge after we get to this? The man that double kicked him. But
yes,
you know Raw Underground is going to NXT.
Yes, this fake Bloodsport thing, Raw Underground, is going to NXT, which, why don't you just call it NXT Underground?
It sounds more like Fight Club if it's right, Raw Underground.
I guess, but
NXT, whatever. Does NXT Underground roll off the tip of your tongue?
Raw Underground rolls off the tip of the tongue better, sure, but it's not on Raw. It's not on Raw.
During week one of NXT Gold Rush, it was announced during a backstage segment that the MMA-influenced Raw Underground match concept is coming to NXT on USA. Damon Kemp confronted Eddie Thorpe backstage during the show on Tuesday night and informed him that he has gotten approval for the Raw Underground to return in 2 weeks. And the two will be competing in the first Raw Underground on NXT Showdown. The match will feature 20x20 ring with no ropes, with the only way you can win it via knockout, submission, or stoppage.
Okay. So I guess we'll see how they do that. I remember I watched one of those things, and it sucked because of the camera work, but hopefully it's better.
You and your camera work. You bring the photographer out of me, but I'm like, I'm trying to enjoy the fan. Man. The Bob Marley gods, Ramblemania judges, and everyone that just chose here. In the name of Mello, the Canine Crusader, I now declare this the Ramble in the Ramble Zone. Ding, ding, ding.
This Friday's episode of SmackDown averaged 2.4 million viewers, which is up 6% from last week.
Thanks
to the main event, Jay. Second best audience since April 28th. Number one on the cable charts in 18 to 49 with a 6.7 rating. The closest competition was the U.S. Open, which did a 4.0, which with the Open going on, it probably won't cut into the ratings too much, but those ratings probably will go up as the weeks go on as we get close to the later stages.
So right when it opened, I found my favorite sign of the entire episode.
Oh, this show? Okay, so yeah. So tell me what it is.
The WWE refs are better than the SEC.
Oh. they are mad about college football. They are mad. I don't know why, but they are mad.
I mean, what happened in college football with the SEC?
I don't know. I mean, the refs but that's all fucking football refs. Every sport, truth be told, every fan of every sport complains about the refs in the sport. It doesn't matter what the sport is. They're going to be like, these fucking refs. It happens in the NBA, the NFL, NHL, MLB. It's the fucking umpires. Every sport seems to have a problem with officiating. You know how this damn show opens. Recaps, recaps, recaps upon recaps.
Recap of Roman Reigns and Jey Uso's decision and all that blah, blah, blah. As well as Charlotte saying she is the line on the Grayson Waller Effect show. Also scheduled, we had Io Sky versus Zelina, AJ and Mitchin versus Karrion and Scarlett. And the number one contenders tag team gauntlet match with the LWO, Brawling Brood, Street Profits, the Good Brothers, and Pretty Deadly. I'm still getting used to Pretty Deadly. Those shirts are way too tight for them.
They are tight shirts. I mean, I think they're a decent.
It's too sparkly for my liking. It's too sparkly.
I was kind of interested in this gauntlet match to start the show, but foolish me for being interested in a wrestling match. Like this, the gauntlet match to determine the number one contenders to Kevin Owens and Sami's titles. They are watching in the back, Kev and Sami, at what is a relatively normal angle, actually. Usually they'd be watching TV all to the side and shit, but they were actually just standing in front of the TV. It was slightly turned and they were watching it. It makes sense. For some reason, when they pan around and look at all the tag teams at ringside, like everybody's in a little corner, the LWO are standing on their chairs. They're just standing on the chairs in the corner by the crowd, like, grr. I'm like, what the fuck are y'all doing, man?
Listen, man, they're trying to be good sportsmen.
I guess. They should do a real LWO segment. Like, I wish somebody in this fucking company watched Nitro. They should do what the LWO was doing and just be doing house parties where fucking Rey Mysterio is, they playing dominoes, they doing a bunch of shit. They got girls. Like, go back and watch the original LWO segment in WCW. They were doing wild shit. It was fun. It was having
you
fun.
You gotta remember that we're in the PG era of the E now, so we're not gonna get that, especially, who was I talking to about this? That I was never gonna get an Attitude Era type of vibe from WWE ever again. They like to tease you with it. They're starting to tease like Rhea Ripley versus Solo.
Well, you ain't got to do full-on Attitude Era vibe, but just no. Having guys hang out at a party is, I think that's fine for PG television.
Like Fox gotten better as far as, like, versus Raw, because I tuned in a couple of times. So, because Fox is more of a get-to-it type of, like, you get those badass shows on that show. On that station, right? So they gotta have more of the edge, especially when they're competing with all the other shit on the fucking network. So they're gonna let the stuff that's going on with Roman happen. All this little stuff that you see.
I mean, if they really wanted to, not that they care, but if they ever cared about like really differentiating Raw and SmackDown, they could do that thing, because like Raw's on USA, which is like the character channel, so they can do all those crazy semi-Attitude Era-esque shit there, and then keep the more sports-based stuff going on SmackDown, because Fox technically views WWE as a sports property, which is why they sometimes have Michael Cole reading copy for like college football games and shit like that, or NASCAR or whatever, because it's technically under the umbrella of Fox Sports. So, I mean, if you ever wanted to do that differentiation, you could, but they don't. It's all WWE. This match starts, and then the camera work.
Here we go again.
Like, I'm sitting here. I'm like, all right, let's see what's going on. We got the Street Profits and the Brawling Brutes, and then the camera just starts cutting around 10 times in 8 seconds. And if they don't want me to follow the match, I ain't going to waste my time trying to get details. And then not to mention, the match ended in very short order anyway. The Street Profits get eliminated very quickly with a bro kick from Sheamus. That brings in the Good Brothers going into the commercial break. And I knew when the Good Brothers came in, they were not lasting long. Because that's not how my boys rock.
That's sad. Those, the way you said that, whoa. Your boys don't last long. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what I mean. They get in.
What's that hole?
We're gonna get paid. Yeah. Gallo's got some heat on Sheamus and it's going back and forth. The heat segment is just spent cutting back and forth between every team reacting to a headlock. It's like, it's just a fucking headlock. You do not have to do camera cuts for this. But whatever. Sheamus breaks free with a power slam. He goes for the tag, but Carl Anderson comes in, cuts him off, and then he eats a bro kick, and the Good Brothers are eliminated. Get paid, my boys. I will see you in the back. Get them paychecks. The LWO is next. The LWO is gone. Rich Holland gets them the fuck out of there immediately. And then Hit Row comes in, and they got eliminated the fastest. Hit Row came in, Top Dollar ran in the ring. He got a bro kick, and they got pinned immediately. Michael Cole calls this man Flop Dollar, which, all right.
And that was funny.
That was funny. I did laugh.
That was funny. Give him that.
And it's funny. And it is funny to me that Michael Cole, after all this time, just because he fell over the top rope one time, is still on his man's head. Michael Cole will not let it go. But it's also funny. Like,
you love it though, because you want them to have that interaction with the wrestlers.
In one token, but on the other, are y'all ever gonna try to put these guys over in any kind of meaningful way? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's cool to make a little jokey jokes, but do you want these guys to just be a jokey joke tag team, or do you want to build them to be something? Because if you're just going to let them be a jokey joke tag team, okay, go ahead. Fuck it. Do what you want.
I mean, but then here's the thing, too. Like, they need to say something about it. They don't go and say, they just do it. And that's the problem.
Yeah, that's cool. But, like, that was months ago. Like, people probably would have forgot if not for the fact that Michael Cole brings it up every time this man is in the ring.
But then they don't cap him.
So, I mean, that's just my question. What do y'all want Hit Row to be? Because if y'all want them to be a serious act, this is not going to help them. But if y'all don't mind them being jokes, then go ahead. Get your jokes off. Pretty Deadly is the last team, which means now we get a real match. Every single match was bullshit up to this point, and now we got the real match.
You know what I hate about them, Tevin?
What?
You know what it is?
What?
It was such an amazing part. That was the only highlight of that match for me with Pretty Deadly. But because of all the fucking sparkle, I was so annoyed.
I do like, they didn't do it in this match, but I do like the spot they do where they put the apron over their faces and they do the switch, because it's like, yeah, they don't look alike, obviously, but they wear the exact same thing and they're built similarly. So you could get confused in that way. It's a good little twist on the Twin Magic thing. He goes for the bro kick, but Wilson dodges and Sheamus follows him out to the apron. And Prince tries to save him, but Sheamus grabs them both and does not 10, not 20, but 30 beats of the Bodger. He is doing that a lot lately. And then Prince eats the Celtic Cross, but Wilson blind tags in, hits the leg drop immediately after for the 1, 2, and 3. Pretty Deadly wins the gauntlet match. They are the number one contenders. It is kind of impressive to me how you have 6 tag teams out here and you made every single one of them look inconsequential. There is no one like WWE in that regard. No one. It's like this was a gauntlet match that was basically fucking 4 squash matches and then 1 match with a heel finish.
It's funny, right? Because I was watching how Sammy and Kevin were reacting in the background. They're like, oh.
Yeah, they're like, okay, these guys, all right.
And like, they went fucking out there.
Man, so this was also funny to me. We went to commercial and we came back. Before we went to commercial, Pretty Deadly won the match and they ran away. Like, they ran up the ramp and they went up to the, and it looked like they were going to the back. Then we come back from break. Now Pretty Deadly is back in the ring celebrating again. And Kevin and Sammy come out to talk to them, which, like, even the post matches are contrived bullshit now. Because Sammy's like, all right, nobody expected you to win, but you guys won. So we'll give you credit for that. But that was 5 minutes ago. And you guys have been in the ring celebrating the whole time. You've overstayed your welcome. No, they didn't. They left. And they came back because you had to come out and tell them to leave. So Sammy is like, all right, leave. And then they respond that by saying, you know, when we win the titles, we're going to celebrate for even longer. And they do a whole bit around that. We're gonna party for even longer. And Sammy looks over at Kev and he's like, yo, Kev, aren't you mad at these dudes? They're acting up in there. And Kev is like, no.
I'm trying to be him because of you.
Yeah. I'm trying to listen to you. You've been telling me I didn't need to calm down lately. I need to chill out. So I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to chill out. But listening to these guys makes me want to punch their stupid faces. And Kev gets mad. And Sammy's like, oh, you want to punch them in the face? Well, then let's go punch them in the face. And they run down to the ring.
That was
Pretty Deadly runs off. And there we go.
That That was my. I love that. I love that. It was like, let KRA, let him out. Let baby out.
Yeah, Kev and Sammy are always, you know, going to be entertaining TV. So them and Pretty Deadly will probably be fun. It'll be fun.
We know Sammy and Kevin are going to need them, so it's okay.
Well, yeah, most likely.
So we go backstage. Roman gave Paul the marching orders. Before the SmackDown started, we saw them come out of their cars. Nobody talked to each other. They just looked at each other and walked away. So we're in the Bloodline locker room. We see a nervous Paul Heyman sitting next to Roman Reigns with Solo Sikoa standing in the background. The wise man of the Bloodline asks Roman Reigns if he heard from Jay. Reigns brushes off the question and points out that when you are the tribal chief, people contact you, not the other way around. He says Jay Uso should be contacting him. He tells Heyman to go find Jay and talk to him. Yes, my tribal chief, he replies before running off. Yes, my tribal chief. Yes, my tribal chief.
That is so hilariously arrogant. Yo, I need to talk to Jay. Why hasn't he called me? Why don't you call him? Because I'm the tribal chief. He needs to call me. But yeah, Paul's got to find him.
But we head back inside the arena where damage control theme hits. And here comes out Io Sky for our next match of the evening as she heads to the ring. By Kevin's future wife, Bailey. We head into a pre-match commercial break.
This match, man. I went in and it's like over under on this being longer than the qualifiers because I knew this wasn't going long for some reason. Zelina extended her hand to Io, but Io let her know right away, this ain't Ring of Honor, baby. So Bailey tries to distract Zelina, but it backfires as Zelina almost rolls Io up. So then Io is yelling at Bailey, like, what the hell are you doing? Get down. Which, again, distracts her. And truth be told, it's Io's fault because Bailey wasn't even doing anything anymore. But she's distracted. Zelina hits the 619, and she gets the win. What is going on in this division? Do they not trust these women to wrestle? Because, like, for the past 3-4 weeks, every women's match on this show has been, like, less than 5 minutes. And it's been bullshit finishes and what is going on with these divisions? What is going on here?
I really think there's like some type of crisis heading in the background and we just don't know about it.
But like it's you have Io, you have Bailey, Charlotte just came back, Bianca's here. Like you have workers on this show. You have people that can have good matches, and yet it's just constant.
You're not registering.
It's just constant. Nothing matches. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
You sound flabbergasted.
I am, because it's like, what is up with this? This division is bad. Like, this women's division is bad. It's very bad. It shouldn't be, because the talent is very good. The talent within the division is very good, but the booking is very bad. Yeah, we got a recap of Asuka's new title. I mean, sorry, Charlotte's new title. Asuka's only holding it for her.
But well, we shoot to the video package showing Flair's return and the setup of her title showdown with Asuka on last week's show. We then see how Bianca was upset with Adam Pearce for promising a rematch and giving a title shot to Charlotte. So we return live where Belair confronts Pearce and backstage and tells him that she tried doing things the right way, but after how things played out last week, she's going to take things into her own hands, right or wrong. So I'm not going to lie. I like how they're going to set her up to be a heel. Because I like how they're also slowly changing, like, the wardrobe design, and it's getting darker.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, you know, the heel turn is going to have sound logic behind it. Yeah, it's gonna have very good logic behind it. Like Bianca, like she said, she did everything the right way, and she still didn't get what, you know, she was owed. And Charlotte just jumped right in front of her. So yeah, it is a good impetus to turn heel. Even though, like, it's sad that Bianca is turning heel because she's getting fucked over because they always do this shit with Charlotte and everybody's just used to it at this point. So she's basically like, no, this is not fair. And everybody's just like, no, this is what Charlotte does. You're wrong. She's not, but she is.
I kind of want to skip this part to get to the Grayson Waller effect so we could talk more about this. But just to wrap that little segment up, Shotzi challenges Bayley to put her Money in the Bank spot on the line. And Io, who just took it upon herself after she fucked up her match, goes and says, yep, she gonna do it. So now it's just like, okay, so you sabotage your way in. So now you're gonna sabotage mine.
Yeah, Bayley's pretty much like, why'd you do that? And Io's like, I'm just trying to help. And great, Bayley's gonna lose like a dork, ain't she? Prove me wrong, WWE. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, because I feel like Bayley's going to lose to Shotzi in fucking 2 minutes off some bullshit-ass distraction finish. Prove me wrong.
And it's going to be EO, and then hopefully this will start breaking damage control up.
Yeah, because that's the whole conceit of this. Damage control is going to break up, and it's going to be it's because they keep losing like geeks. So yeah, it's the Grayson Waller effect now.
All right, so now to the Grayson Waller effect, because I really, really fucking love this promo.
Well, Grayson Waller, he welcomes Charlotte Flair to the ring. Charlotte comes out wearing bedsheets. Grayson says, in 2 weeks, you will face Asuka for the title. And, you know, your past matches with Asuka have had legendary moments, like when you ended her undefeated streak at WrestleMania. Thanks for reminding me. I hate it. Grayson, he asks, will you become a 15-time world champion? And Charlotte just looks like, she says, hey, listen, if you want to talk about numbers, when it comes to numbers, I have Asuka's number. And Bianca Belair interrupts that. And again, is very upset that Charlotte is getting a title shot before her. And Charlotte says, listen, I didn't make the rules. I didn't politic to have the rules rewritten. The line.
I am the fucking line.
Yeah, she said the line starts and ends with me. I am the line. And it's a good line, and it's 100% true. My only issue with it is, just because you call it out, it doesn't make it any better because they just keep doing it. Like this whole, like I said, the whole conceit of this thing between Bianca and Charlotte is that Bianca is sick of Charlotte always doing this shit. But Charlotte's going to continue to keep doing this shit.
Charlotte, and she even goes and references, I'm going to be a 15-time and a 16-time champion.
Yeah, she basically said, yeah, I did this shit, and I'm going to do it again after I lose this title, and I'm going to do it again after that. Like, I'm going to keep doing this. Like Charlotte said, I lost a Rhea, and I didn't get a rematch, so should I also get one? Nah, just stick to not waiting in line, bro. She says she is a champion with or without the title, which is the funniest fucking thing she has ever said.
And she goes, but what type of champion are you when you don't have the title? And then that's where I love how Bianca goes and talks about how I am the longest reigning female champion. You might have the title reign, but it still would never equate to how long I've been a champion.
Yes. She says, I'm the longest reigning champion. I didn't need 14 times to do it. It's a great line. And I still find it hilarious that Charlotte's like, I'm a champion with or without the title. Her entire character is being the champion. Like, she's at the point where if she's not the champion, she's just not on the show. Like, get out of here, Charlotte. But she says, Bianca says, she's going to be at ringside for Charlotte and Asuka's match. And she's going to call her shot on whoever wins. And Charlotte is just smiling because she's lived this movie many times. She knows what's going to happen. She's going to win. And then she's going to lose. And then she's going to win it back when she wants. And so on and so forth.
Or it should just maybe a triple threat, and then she'll just win, and then there'll be someone else to fight, or another Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte.
They'll fuck around and pull a Roman Reigns, and then have her stack Asuka and Bianca on top of each other and win. That's how they be rocking with Charlotte.
Exactly. And by the way, I called it when they were going to have him hold 3 belts.
Yo, that's so funny.
I fucking called it. I just want. We haven't acknowledged that in like 2 episodes ago. Oh, they're gonna make him wear the 3 belts.
It's like you would think in a place with logic, oh hey, he's the unified champion. He doesn't need 2 belts anymore. Here's the new one. No, we gave him a new one just so he could have 3. What and, the fuck?
And then Paul had the whole two.
Yeah, I thought I even made the joke. Yeah, he tired of having Heyman carry two belts. Now Heyman got to carry them anyway, while he carries the other one. Like, what? The
Crayola one.
They're so dumb. So then Paul Heyman, he finds Jay in the back. He's like, you know that Jimmy kicked you on purpose last week. Jimmy does not miss his super kicks. He meant to kick you, and he meant to embarrass you in front of the world. And for that, I'm sorry. And he's like, he's trying to convince him to stick with the bloodline and fall in line. And Jay's like, listen, I'm sorry too, man. Because if I'm in, you out. So yeah, basically reiterating the point, Jay is like, is either me or the wise man. So we'll see how that goes later. AJ Styles and Mia Yim are the freaking Bullet Club versus Karrion Kross and Scarlett.
Scarlett's sexy ass.
Yes, Karrion Kross is a blessed man. So is Keith Lee, if I'm honest. Blue,
yo,
Blue,
they are both lucky men. Nah.
Keith Lee, a blessed man.
Super blessed.
We recap Scarlett blowing heroin into AJ's face last week, whatever the hell that shit was. It was brown, though. They was cooking something crazy. AJ's obviously freaking upset about that. Let me blow no drugs in my face. Mia takes out Scarlett with a German suplex, and she and AJ ping pong Kross around. AJ hits the Styles Clash, but Scarlett comes in and starts flirting with him. And AJ, he takes off his glove, points at his ring finger, and is like, I'm married, bitch.
That was funny, though, because that's why I like and got brought, like, Fox lets them get a little more out there with it.
I like that he took his glove off to do it because he wasn't wearing his ring.
But you saw the tan line because he likes help.
Yeah, I guess the tan line was like, you see, I'm married. I like that he took off his glove to do it.
Very respectful.
Yeah.
Man of the week for that. Good job, AJ.
Yes. AJ is not going to play around on his wife. He ain't listening to none of you hoes. That's a married man.
She a married woman too, but she looked like a goddamn seductress.
Listen. A lesser man would definitely have folded, and I would not have blamed him. But AJ did not.
He did not. He is golden.
But unfortunately, Kross takes advantage of that. He drops AJ, puts him in the Kross jacket, and then covers him for the 1, 2, and 3. Kross pins AJ Styles, so I guess this feud will continue.
Returning to Roman Reigns with the latest on Jey Uso. We, as expected, Heyman is being confronted by Reigns. He asks him about Jey. He just says, shook his head. He shook his head no to suggest that he won't. And as he expected, he told him he's going to fall in line. Solo makes one slight movement, and Heyman gets scared and runs off. Solo then asks Reigns if he should handle this. Reigns said, not yet. There's plenty of time. Go into a commercial break. Yo, I hate that they made Paul Heyman sound like such a bitch.
They be doing that. My favorite thing about these type of segments is that it shows that Roman doesn't watch WWE. Because, I mean, he confronted him with the cameras at the show. Like, if Roman was watching the show in the back, you would have seen that. But no, Roman is just doing whatever the hell he's doing in his tribal chief room. But it's clearly not watching WWE. He does not watch the product. He needs Heyman to keep tabs on what the hell's going on the show. Now we got Kayla Braxton. She's with Cameron Grimes, and she's going to interview him. Except no, because Baron Corbin just runs up and destroys him, even though Cameron Grimes is supposed to be the one looking for Baron Corbin. But
he's a free agent. He do what he wants.
Yeah, he can do what he wants. He's a free agent. Cameron Grimes got caught lacking. That's what happens. Now, Rey Mysterio comes down to the ring. It always tickles me seeing Rey in the LWO shirt because, again, I watched WCW. In the original version, Rey was forced to be in it. He didn't want to be in it. Eddie forced him. But hey, who watched WCW, am I right?
Now he's the head.
Yes, now he's the man. Ray says there are many accomplishments that he's proud of, but he is truly proud of reforming the LWO. He says the man that he's bringing out now is going to be a great Mr. Money in the Bank, Santos Escobar. Santos comes out in straight up babyface mode. He was so babyface, I was like, oh, he's going to turn on him, isn't he? He's like, I've made many sacrifices, but now I have the opportunity of a lifetime. I thank this man, Rey Mysterio. I love you, Rey. You inspire me. And when I go into that ladder match, I'm fighting for you. I'm fighting for La Raza and anybody in the WWE universe that has a dream. Like, he's laid it on so thick, it's like he got to be turning heel soon, right? Got to be, right?
Of course, because he's going to be babyfacing and winning to a point where he's going to elevate himself to probably be like the top Latino in the LWO.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm with that because Santos Escobar and Rey Mysterio would be fire. Be a great match. Yes. Give me that match. That match would be fire. But then they are interrupted by the one and only, Roman Reigns, but the other megastar in this company, L.A. Knight.
Yeah.
He comes in the ring. He's talking his trash. He pushes Rey out of the way.
Amazing promo.
Mm-hmm. This dude, like, again, I'm going to talk about it in this upcoming match, but they got to stop forcing him as a heel because it's not going to lead to good things for anybody that he's involved with. They try to set him up for the 619, but he slides out, and that leads into the match, Santos Escobar versus LA Knight. And so, again, the crowd adores LA Knight. They love him. And, again, WWE is trying their hardest to ignore that. And it sucks because they never seem to realize how doing this hurts the other guy. Or maybe they don't care. They probably don't care. But they set Santos up with this sugary sweet babyface promo. Like, he's like, I love you, Rey. I love my family. I love the people. And then they had LA Knight attack Rey Mysterio because the idea is supposed to be, well, if he attacks Rey Mysterio, everybody loves Rey Mysterio. They're going to boo him. They're not going to boo him. What they're going to do is sit in silence while Santos Escobar is on the offense because, yeah, okay, Santos is the good guy. We're not going to boo LA Knight. We have no interest in that. They have no interest in booing LA Knight. They want to cheer him. So let them cheer him.
I saw something on TikTok where they compared LA Knight to The Rock as far as his promos go.
His cadence is exactly The Rock. It's exactly.
Let me tell you something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's crazy because
we got the picture of both of them right here, or like a little clip of their. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy because like a worse version of this could be someone that comes off as just a ripoff of The Rock. And this has been said about LA Knight for years, even back in Impact when he was Eli Drake. Yeah, he sounds like The Rock, but he makes it work. It works for him. He gets over doing it wherever he goes. Everywhere he's ever been, the first thing people say about him is, this dude sounds like The Rock. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it's like, yeah, LA Knight, yeah, Eli Drake, yeah, dummy, yeah. Like, he's good at it. He as far as impersonators go, call him an impersonator, but it works for him. And, you know, the crowd's loving him. He tries to roll him up and grab the ropes, but Santos counters that, and he gets the 1, 2, and 3. He's like, I know how to be a heel, you fool. So then Knight, he attacks Santos post-match, and Rey comes back out and runs him off. And that's how we end that. Stop forcing LA Knight as a heel, please, because it hurts your baby faces. Just let him be a baby face.
Just because he's an asshole doesn't mean he has to be a heel.
Yeah, The Rock was an asshole, even as a babyface. The Rock was never not an asshole.
We return from the break, and we see main event Jey Uso walking the hallways backstage before heading out to make a decision regarding the bloodline. We see Sami Zayn sitting on a production box as Jey walks by. Jey stops. Sami pops to his feet, looks at him, and smirks in an understanding type of way. Sami walks off smiling, and Jey keeps on as well. Like, that was an indication, right? Then we shoot inside the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, where the familiar sounds of Roman Reigns' badass theme hits. Out comes the Tribe of Chief.
The Tribe of Chief.
with Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa. Michael Cole mentioned that next week Reigns passes Pedro Morales, of all time list of longest WWE title reigns. As Reigns and company settles into the ring, we head into another quick commercial timeout. When we return from the break, Reigns and company are in the ring. The Tribe of Chiefs does his intro catchphrase. Lexington, Kentucky, acknowledge me.
Acknowledge.
They respond, and then the theme of the Usos hits, and out by himself walks Jey Uso. He settles into the ring, and Reigns says everyone knows what they want in reference to the fans. He says they want answers. He asks Jey flat out if he's in or not. Jey says, you tell me, Oos, it's going to be him or it's going to be me, pointing out to Paul Heyman. Reigns tells Jey that when he's the tribal chief, he can have anyone he wants as his wise man. He says Heyman is his wise man, not Jey's, not the bloodlines, but his. Want to take it away, Tev?
Yes. So, yeah, after he points that out about the wise man, Roman says, you know, we've been grooming you for this for the past 3 years. The only problem now is your brother, but that brings out his brother, Jimmy. And Jimmy's like, nah, Oos, the problem is our cousin. He says, Roman is just using you, man. He's been using you this whole time. He's been using us. And Roman says, listen, in the 10 years you've been here, since you've been under me, you've made WrestleMania. And not only have you made WrestleMania, you main evented it every single year. It took you 10 years before that to even make the show. He says, you can't be a tribal chief and a twin at the same time. He says,
oh, yeah, you can. You're born like that.
Yeah. And he says, when we made Jey the right-hand man, you know the only one that had a problem with it? It wasn't Paul. It was Paul's idea. The one who had a problem with it was Jimmy. So Jey looks at Jimmy. He's like, is that true? And Jimmy's like, it is. So now Jey turns to Jimmy. He's mad at him. And he's like, after all this time, you, the prom king, you know, Prince Charming. He says, I've been trying to keep up with Roman for years. But in reality, it's been you that I've been trying to keep up with because you're the big brother. And then when you got hurt, I stepped up. I became the right-hand man. And because of this man, I'm main event Jey Uso, pointing to Roman. He says, you know what, Oos? You out. He stands in front of Jimmy and he says, but you know what? I'm out too. And he turns around, drops the super kick on Roman. Crowd goes crazy. Solo looks over. He rushes them. Both Usos super kick him, take him out of the ring. You got Roman on the ground like, what the fuck is this? And he gets up. Roman selling in this was really good. He's shocked. He's pissed. He's holding his face. He gets up and he's struggling to get up. And then he runs over to them and they super kick him again. And Roman goes down. And we end the show with the Usos in the ring, throwing up the ones. They say, we the ones. And that's what SmackDown. This main event segment is what SmackDown. The only thing.
Yep.
This is a one-segment show every week. Sometimes you get a good match. Sometimes you get a good promo.
This was just too promo-heavy.
Yeah, but like the only thing you can watch this show and expect any consistent quality or urgency or gravitas from is the bloodline. It's what the crowd is here for it. Like you look at any other point in this show versus when Jey super kicked Roman.
That was hilarious.
The difference in reaction is astronomical. Like they don't care about shit in comparison to this bloodline story. And, like, it was a good segment. Great segment. Very good end segment. All the players played their roles perfectly. And it feeds into the next part of this, which is what they're calling the Civil War now perfectly. Like, again.
Oh, God.
If you want my recommendation.
That sounds corny.
Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. But if you want my recommendation, you can skip just about everything on the show and watch the Bloodline segment. Because it's a one-segment show.
That's what everyone really just tuned in for.
Yeah, like, don't even bother with all this other stuff. Like, it's interchangeable nonsense. It's noise. The Bloodline is where they really put in the effort and they're cooking.
What happens when there's no more Bloodline, though? Like, and no more Civil War. Like, how far are they going to go? Hiroshima?
I mean, once the Bloodline's over, I guess they just go back to how they were before, which is nothing. Nothing really is good. It's just a bunch of talented people having matches and doing promos, and none of it means anything.
That sounds so depressing.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to watch it, but here I am.
I mean, no one told you guys to have a podcast.
That's true. It's my fault for deciding to podcast about wrestling. That's what I need to do. I need to podcast about something else.
We can play video games.
That's true. I do like video games. There's a lot of good video games coming out. I just did a Nintendo Direct and all that stuff. Yeah. Changing professions.
And then watch one of these two that's going to be a Jeopardy.
Yeah. We'll let one of those rock.
Yeah. Finally get TJ versus Hazel for the Ramble Mania Championship.
Indeed. I'm taking that title. I'm coming for it.
But that's what SmackDown. A one segment SmackDown.
Yeah. As usual. Watch the Bloodline.
I think we should just tell them where they can find us. You can find me everywhere at www.rawzonenyc.com. Follow the Raw Zone. Get involved with us. We got our Give Back for Sean coming up. So stay in tune with that. For myself, you can find me everywhere at imivy.xo_.
Of course, yeah, you already know where to find us. Yeah. Find us on Instagram at Ramble Mania Show, at Banter Club Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Ramble Mania, Facebook.com/Ramble Mania Show. Also find our group there, Ramble Mania Show's Banter Club, Mania of the Wrestlers, Podcasters, everybody we associate with, plus all that goes on and all that's going down. As far as audio goes, everybody else find us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, TuneIn, Overcast. Everywhere your podcasts are found, search Ramble Mania Show or Banter Club. As far as the visuals, twitch.tv/Ramble Mania Show. We're on Spotify video, we're on YouTube. Search Ramble Mania Show or Banter Club. When you get here, like the videos, click subscribe, click the bell so that when a new content drops, it goes straight to you.
Yeah.
As far as me personally, find me on Instagram at TJTheGreat1. That's TJTheGR8. And find me on Twitter at TJTheGreat. That's TJTheGR8. It's as simple as that.
That was wow. So, from myself, TJTheGreat1, who will now jump into recording this week's Dynamite. So, catch this episode, that episode, all the episodes everywhere. But to our millions of fans around the world, and to your moms everywhere, bid y'all a good night and a two sweep.
You already know, two sweep, good fight, and of course, good night.
Morning, goodies.
This is Bullet Club.